Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is EJ and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, EJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple action. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight, which is step 10. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please join me in welcoming our panel. We have Jason and Debbie. Okay, so I will read the first paragraph, which is going to be on page 84 of the big book, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, just as a reminder, step 10 is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So the first paragraph, page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Jason?
Hey everybody, I'm Jason. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Jason.
My sobriety date is August 4th of 2013, which was the end of about 30 years of drinking and using drugs pretty much every day. And It wasn't a problem for me in the beginning. It was a solution for me in the beginning. I would say that drinking was fun and it worked for me for maybe 10 years. And then it was fun and it sort of worked, but it had some problems for about 10 years. And then the last 10 years, it was just all problems and it didn't work at all. But by then, I couldn't stop. I didn't want to stop when I thought it was working, but it eased anxiety that I felt. And I think that it took me 8 years or so really, really trying to get sober before I got a white chip that I could hold on to. And I don't think I understood what the problem was, and so I didn't understand what the solution is. And so I was really just in here because my, you know, I was in the hot seat, had to get out of trouble, and this place does a good job of that. I think if you come and you sit here and you just don't do anything for a little while, some of the heat goes down because I'm not making more mistakes, but I don't have a solution that's going to help me stay sober. And so once I understood that the anxiety, treating the anxiety with an anesthetic is really what was going on with my drinking. I remember from the very beginning as a teen feeling comfortable from the first drink, and I never really gave any thought to putting it down again for the next 20 years or so. It just seemed like a good idea because I felt better. And I was drinking alcoholically from the very beginning. I didn't really notice it, but soon after we started drinking, we started getting alcohol on the way to school, to high school, and putting it in a soda bottle and bringing it in with us. And it never occurred to me, this wasn't just fun. This was, you know, not being able to face a regular day without alcohol. And so I continued to drink to learn to be able to exist on the planet with some ease because I was so anxious. And I never learned any other way to deal with it. And at the end of 30 years, my life had just come completely unglued, and I hit a bottom that was a gift because I was able to surrender and admit that I had no good ideas at all left on how to live my life. I still have a lot of ideas for you all, for people, you know, running the town and running my building and running the company I work for, but I didn't have any ideas that worked to help me live at peace. And then I surrendered and came in here, and I was able to talk to you all about what you were doing and read the book and learn about the steps and apply them to my life. And AA saved my life. My life is better now. Every day since I've been sober is better than any of the days I had before I got sober. And that's because of AA. It's because of the steps helped me clean up the wreckage of my past, and the principles helped me try to live in a good spot with some peace every day. And so my journey then is, you know, is recovery 1 through 9, and my life has turned around, and now I just want to stay here and I want to be sober. And so this brings us to step 10, which is where we start today, which is, how am I going to stay in AA? How am I going to maintain some kind of condition where I don't need the bottle again compulsively to ease what's going on? This paragraph, you know, I have a lot of suggestions for people. I've learned since I've gotten sober that a lot of them are uninformed, and many of them are unsolicited, so I don't offer them all. But looking at this paragraph, it's so dense that you could almost break it up into a couple of sentences a piece. I mean, this is really an incredible. The whole 10th step is in these three paragraphs. But some of the things in the beginning that stand out to me, one is, we're entering the realm of the spirit. And I tried to think about, what does that mean to me? And I know that in the loftiest way, it's God's world. I'm living in God's world. But in a practical sense, and even from earlier on in this journey, what it meant to me was not living in Jason's world, because I thought it was Jason's world, or at least that's the perspective I had. I could go through a whole day either just thinking about me or thinking about everything else through the lens of how did it impact me. And so learning to live a different way where I'm considerate of the people around me and I coexist, I can even contribute at times. The way of life of the steps on an ongoing basis that's in step 10 brings me into the realm of the spirit, or at least out of the realm of me. And then it also sets this up by talking about growing in understanding and effectiveness. And I struggled for a while with that idea, you know, what am I going to understand more? Sometimes I think I understand less. The more sobriety I have, the less certain I am I know the answer to anything, the more open I am that I could be wrong a lot. And it's actually quite liberating. So I don't feel like I'm really wiser, but I think that it's really about learning how to live in God's world, learning how to live in a world that's a way of life that doesn't carry around a lot of resentment, that doesn't carry around the old resentment, that doesn't generate new resentment, that doesn't spread, you know, ill will in a way that I can either treat people kindly and help them, or at least just kind of exist without doing any harm. And so growing in understanding and effectiveness for me is just learning a completely new way to live. And then they talk about the lifetime affair and how long we're going to have to keep doing this. And it's important to me now to say, I'm here for good. I'm in AA. This is my seat. I have no plans to leave AA. I hope I never leave AA. And that's not how I felt in the beginning. In the beginning, I felt like it was a bit of a course or an education I was going to get out of trouble or maybe fix some of my problems, which it did. But when that was my attitude, that I was going to do AA and leave, I was still miserable. Once I didn't have the solution here to help me live, I was dry for a while, and I'd go back out. And so getting to the point of surrender that says, I'm here for good. If the only medicine I have to take to treat my alcoholism is to come to some meetings and connect with my fellows and talk about how we're going to put the principles in place, that's a good lifetime affair for me. It's better than the bargain I had, which was a life that was descending down so rapidly that I needed a new way of life, and I would like to stay. And that, to me, is what we're talking about today. And then we get into how I take the 10th step and what does the 10th step mean, and we'll have some time to talk about that. I think in the beginning for me, thinking about the continuity of this, continuing to watch for resentment, for selfishness, for dishonesty, when I take steps 4 through 9 for the first time, I'm basically being honest about my life for the first time with an accumulated 45 years of garbage, of things I've done. I've treated people poorly, or I've imagined things that I'm carrying around. And I don't want to do it once every 45 years. That doesn't seem like the right cadence to me anymore. So I did it once as best I could, and now I want to continue to watch. I'd love to do it every moment of every day, but I don't, because I get obsessed with what's in front of me, if there's action at work or fun at home. But even if I can't do it continuously, I need to do it pretty often. I need to do it more than once every 45 years, and I need to do it more than once a year, and I need to do it more than once a week. I need to really every day, and probably multiple times a day, look at what's going on in my life, because this becomes kind of the protection for me to avoid the self-centeredness and the spiritual sickness from cropping back up and then taking root. I know it's going to keep coming back up because I am fundamentally insecure and afraid deep down inside, but I can treat that through the steps. And if I take my eye off the ball and I stop watching for it, the weeds start to crop up, and I just want to stop it before it's overtaken my life. And that means whether I can continue to watch for it minute by minute, or whether ideally, you know, at least every couple of hours or once a day, I can watch for what's going on, then I avoid the buildup to where it gets to be too much for me. There is a point at which the resentment will build up and it will tip me over. I mean, there's some kind of continuum from a person at peace to a person who's got a little thorn in your side. Something happened today, yesterday, or something unresolved. To people that we see and that I've been that carry tons of resentment around, that you can almost feel it, and you know it's going to be hard to feel peace. To then the last step for me is just being crippled with self-pity when all I have is resentment, and then I'm going to drink. And so I need to watch these weeds growing as often as I can. And one of the things that has happened to me is that the continuing to watch sort of translates into a high level of sensitivity when I'm uncomfortable. So I always thought I'd be less sensitive when I went through the steps and I learned how life fits together and how to treat people. But now I think I'm much more sensitive to anything that happens that disturbs me, because I do know what peace feels like. I can't say that it's something I have every day, all day long, but I know what it feels like, and I know what it feels like to be disturbed, and I can feel that when it rises in intensity. And so that sensitivity for me is part of the system that we have, this way of life, that I want to be sensitive to picking up a resentment. You know, so today at work, someone says something to me and I don't like it and I want to berate them. It's starting to build already. I'd love to catch it the second. I'd like to not even have that feeling. I'd like to be a spiritually perfect if I could, but at least when this thing starts to catch, I want to see it as soon as possible so I have a chance to use the tools. The longer I let it go, the less success I'm going to have. And so this is getting me into working 4 through 9 as often as I possibly can, which is at least more frequently than every 45 years and hopefully close to every day. So that's what I got.
Thanks. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
And Jason and I were talking, there's 3 paragraphs for step 10, and I've been getting a lot of messages of to shut up and talk less, and so I'm going to let him talk as much as he wants. But I work at a job. I have my little headphones, and I talk to people all day long, and it usually takes me about 10 minutes to do my job, and I say that at the beginning of the conversation. And the person that says, I'm really in a hurry, I don't know if I have 10 minutes, it will take me 20 minutes to do that call because they don't stop talking. And so I really am going to try and stay focused, but so I didn't know I was speaking tonight until on my way home from work. And I got the text, there's cancellation, can you speak? And I'm always, first answer, no, don't want to do that. Really don't want to do that. And, I saw a bad car accident a couple weeks ago, so I've made a promise, which I have broken, but I made a promise that I'm not going to text or call while I'm driving because I'm not that talented. And so I have broken that promise, but not to this, because I want to go for that half hour and maybe he might get somebody else. And then what happened, because I have a very funny God, very funny, and I love him for that because it's a requirement in my world to laugh. And so I'm thinking about it, and if I had to say what step am I in right now, it's 10. Because I've had about a week or two of that little subtle irritability, and I've just got a little bit of a bad attitude, and I'm not being, like it says here, I'm not doing this at once and immediately and quickly, and the pot's just kind of starting to boil a little bit. And so I really have felt that for the last couple of weeks. And not to say that I'm not praying and I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm not doing exactly what this paragraph is suggesting that I'm doing. The other thing, did I say, I don't think I said my, what are my qualifications? Why am I here? I got sober October the 24th, 1982, and this is my home group. And I cannot control the amount of alcohol I put in my body once I take that first drink. And so that's why I'm here today. But when I read this the first time, I sponsored myself the first time, and that didn't work well. And so I got drunk. And then the judge thought it was a good idea that I come back to AA, and so I did that, and I got a sponsor, and we worked through these, and I can tell you that, this is, of course, 10 is after 9. The promises in 9 really were pretty amazing in my life. It took me about 9 months to get through the first 9 steps, and they were pretty amazing. I did not have the effect after 5 that people have here in the rooms, but the point I'm trying to get to is that we're watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, which sounds very familiar throughout the book, if you've read the book. And so what it brings to mind is the 4th step. And when I was looking at resentments and fears and sex inventory, those were very subtle emotions. I had no clue. What are you talking about? What's a resentment? I know rage. I know jealousy. I know revenge. I know deceit. And so these are selfish, yeah, I pretty much knew that one, but I definitely knew fear, because that's why I had all the other ones, was to cover the fear, because you can't know I'm afraid. And so if you're new, I'm saying that because you may be saying, what the heck are they talking about? And so it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I was willing to follow directions. Another reason I love my God is because he talks to me in one-liners from movies, and what came to me as I was driving home is, I forgot the line now, from Untouchables, what are you willing to do, Sean Connery? And so what are you willing to do, Debbie, for your sobriety? And he's laughing up there, he's laughing because he knows this is right where I am. And the other thing, I love music, and so what song comes on the radio? Love and Tolerance is Our Code. What song comes on the radio? What's Love Got to Do with It? Tina Turner. And I am singing, and there's a person in this room that may or may not remember this, but we're going to Nag's Head one day when this song was popular, And it must have come on four times, and I'm singing it at the top of my lungs. And we're both sober and singing it at the top of my lungs. And so that's just how God works to me. It may not make any sense to you, but it made perfect sense to me when I was driving home. I also heard dirty deeds done dirt cheap, and I'm going to try and work it in. But I don't know if God's going to go for it, though. And so anyway... You gotta laugh. Truly, sobriety, I think laughter is a symptom of sobriety. If you ain't laughing and you're sober, something's wrong. Not that everything's great, trust me. But anyway, so love and tolerance is our code. I know that today to be the absolute answer. When I came in this room, that was the most ridiculous thing I had ever heard. You know, first of all, let me even back up. To say I'm sorry, to make an amends, to talk to somebody, to talk to God, all of those ideas were crazy to me. So I had to do those 9 steps to be able to get to this point. And then, you know, sorry, I was never wrong. Why would I say I'm sorry? And equally important was I had to be right, but equally important was that you had to know you were wrong, you know, because that's how it worked in Debbie's world. And so When you're living your life on self-propulsion, which is what I do as an alcoholic, I got no plan B backup. If my plan doesn't work, I got no God, I got no power until I work these 9 steps. And now all of a sudden, they're asking me to do something different, to live my life differently. And that was a big thing my sponsor told me, stop the behavior. I was a barroom drinker, I was a blackout drinker, I was a pick up boys and go home drinker, and the stop the behavior took a while for me. I stopped the drinking, but a lot of the behavior got worse before it got better with this program. And so I have to compare myself to me, because I want to be perfect Debbie, and he said the perfect word. I won't have to say I'm sorry if I'm perfect. If I don't do anything wrong, this will be easy. Cake. I can do this. So I'm not perfect. And so then I will discount that, hey, I have a pretty peaceful life today, but I've had 2 weeks of irritability. And so now it's all, I don't do this. I'm not doing this. You know, and it's very subtle and it's very slow and it's just a little bit of a tea kettle boil. And then you look at me wrong, or then I look over at my husband and he's breathing and like, what's that about? You know, and then something at work happens and I'm getting irritable. And I hope I don't offend anyone with this, but then my sponsees start calling and I'm like, they're whining. Why are they whining? And I get the irony that I am now whining. I get it. Call my sponsor. She's not there. She doesn't answer. She's not calling me back. Screw her. Don't need her. And so I start with 30-some years of sobriety. I start to do this bubbling up because it doesn't go away. But the grace today is that I've done this over and over and over again. And I know it now. I know I've been irritable. You know, there's a saying, I always mess up the sayings, but there's some kind of saying about, if a man calls you an ass, just ignore him. If a second man calls you an ass, you may be looking for a saddle. So I've been in the market for a saddle here the last 2 weeks, and I'm going to get to the solution here in the next reading, because I'm grateful to say that I'm coming out of this slump, and I'll tell you how that happened on the next paragraph. Thanks.
Thank you all so much. The second paragraph is also on page 84, starting with "and we." And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Jason.
When I read through these three paragraphs, the, The first one makes sense to me, staying current on your inventory, watching what's going on. And then the third one that talks about don't sit on your rest on your laurels, once we looked up what laurels meant, made sense to me. But this one in the middle took me a long time. I still struggle a bit with this idea of not struggling and having the problem removed, but not being cocky. I hear people say, I'm not afraid of alcohol. I am afraid of alcohol. I have a very healthy, I believe, fear. I'm afraid of animals that eat people. That's a fear. I don't expect that to be removed. And I'm afraid of alcohol. I think that if I take another drink or use a drug, that I will not be able to stop myself from having a second and a third and a tenth and a hundredth. And it may never end, or it will end and I'll be in jail, or I'll be dead, or someone else will be dead. So the fear, it's not the kind of fear that I wake up with the sweats in the middle of the night, but I am afraid of alcohol. I do consider this to be, you know, it's still it is a fatal malady. It's a fatal illness in my life. And I love to joke and to talk about the hope and the change in my life, but really I don't want to die. And so I am afraid, but that said, it talks about not struggling. And I do see that, because I can't, if it's up to me day to day to decide if I'm going to drink, I'm going to drink, because some days are good and some days are bad, and I'll fall behind on my inventory and I'll have a bad day or a couple of days and I'll pick something up. My sobriety can't have anything to do with struggling day to day to figure things out. It has to be a system, a way of life, a way of living, of being and thinking, so that it's not day-to-day decision-making. Because when people talk about triggers or what they're going to do not to drink, I can't do that, because ultimately I always choose some anesthetic on my mind if I've let myself grow anxious. And so it's got to be something that really becomes part of me. And what that is the steps. I need to take the steps to clean up the wreckage of my past, and then I need to put these principles into practice, ideally every principle, every day in my life, to keep me in a good spot. And when I do that, I'm not afraid that I'm going to drink today. I'm still afraid of alcohol, and I always will be, and I see people dying in the rooms, and it's sad, but we don't have to, because if the solution is here and the principles enable me to get to a place where I'm not trying to make a decision day by day or week by week, am I going to drink? And so, you know, what are the principles that really make that happen? For me, it is the love and tolerance is our code, and the thy will not mine be done, because I don't have great decision-making skills in anything that involves me. I'm okay in things that don't involve me, so doing a math problem or a jigsaw puzzle, I'm okay, but if I'm involved, I have trouble being objective and thinking about other people and being considerate and being sane even, and we talk about insanity here. So I need principles to fall back on, and I always found it comforting when people talked about doing the next right thing I take comfort in pausing when agitated, because I don't want to have to figure things out. I like to try to slow it down and try to understand what is God's will. And it's not always, you know, I might say, you know, does God want me to cross the street now, or does he want me to wait to cross the street? I'm not looking for that kind of direction, but I do feel that most of the time we can tell what is the loving thing to do and what is the unloving thing to do. At least it gives me some direction to go in, and it takes some of the options on the table for my life off the table, which is trying to get what I want, regardless of how it impacts other people, which I like to do, or not telling the truth because I don't want you to know the truth about me. A lot of things come off the table that leave me in spiritual sickness, that I will day to day be in jeopardy of drinking. And so the principle is simply the love and tolerance is our code, and thy will not mine be done. It gives me, and do the next right thing, helps me make decisions so I don't have to consider myself. And that's because I feel sane now, but my alcoholism, my life of drinking and using drugs is just littered with stories of incredible insanity. And I think we have to really, I have to acknowledge that. I remember when they said when I was in rehab that you are in a mental hospital, and I kind of didn't like it. And I was, but I wasn't on a winning streak. I mean, I had been arrested for a felony and I was out on bail to go to rehab, and I couldn't see my kids and I was gonna lose my job, and the honey wasn't too happy with me either. And I'm kind of bristling at the idea that I'm in a mental hospital. But a mental hospital is exactly where I needed to be. And that's probably where I'm going back to, because the insanity of my alcoholism, there's so many stories we can all tell about our drunk log and the things we do, that one of the experiences I had that for me most clearly illustrates how insane I was. In the last year I was drinking, I woke up, or I came to, in the emergency room three different times, three different emergency rooms, three different cities, no idea how I got there. And with the people around me providing medical attention as if they were very concerned about my condition. And the only thing that I was thinking about was, am I in trouble? First thought, eyes open, am I in trouble? Not, what have I done so that I need emergency medical intervention on a regular basis, and I can't even ask for it because I've apparently, as best I can tell, just passed out in a couple of different places. But I want to know, am I in trouble? And then the next thing is, can I get out of here? This is the sequence of events, followed by, can I get something to drink? Not, wow, something is not working here, and more danger. And one time I was down the street from here, and someone just called the police because I guess I was lying face down on the side of the street. I don't know if it was in the street or in the grass, but thank God, right? That is real close to all sorts of bad happening. Could have died, could have had someone treat me poorly, but instead a Good Samaritan calls the police and they take me in. And all I could think of was, I'm not in trouble. I didn't get a DUI. And then another time I woke up in the BWI Airport Hospital. I didn't even know they had an airport hospital, but or a clinic. I don't know what it was. No idea how I got there. The last thing, I can go back a couple of hours, and I was in BWI, and I was on my way back home from visiting my kids because my ex-wife had told me to leave because I couldn't stop drinking. And first thing I'm thinking is, am I in trouble? I don't remember there being any cops. I don't remember anything. I don't know how I got there. Apparently, somewhere in the terminal, people felt like I needed help, emergency medical help. And I'm thinking, am I in trouble? Can I leave? Can I get something to drink? And then the third time, I don't even remember. It's happened to me so many times. It was Norfolk General once and the BWI Airport once. And I just want to know if I'm in trouble. Now, that's insane. And so I can make some reasonable decisions, but as my alcoholism is involved, I'm completely insane. And so putting this thing back in my hands for day-to-day management is not a good idea, because I can't weigh these consequences with my need for anesthetic to ease the anxiety. So I need to be living this every day to have any kind of immunity or reprieve. And we can talk about what that daily routine is, but the first thing for me is, it's not a day-to-day decision, it's not a struggle. I gotta get to a place that I don't want to drink because I have some peace because I'm doing this. And I do fear alcohol, but I know that this works. I know that there's peace when I do this, and when I don't, the water starts to boil, the weeds start to pop up, and if I take my off of it too long, I'm living in a world of weeds. I'm probably passed out somewhere. And I thank God that I didn't die any of those times, because each of those times there was something that happened inside of my body. I remember the third time I was driving on the toll road to the airport, and I got pulled over, and the cops, instead of arresting me and doing the paperwork, they just put me in an ambulance basically and sent me to the hospital. And then a couple hours later, I remember coming to. And I can't make decisions. I don't want to be in that situation. So I need to embrace all of these principles every day. That's what I got.
Thank you. Okay. I want to read I don't know. I don't like it when people read definitions, but here I go. All right, so tolerance, because I obviously don't know what it means. The ability or willingness to tolerate something, in particular, opinions or behavior that I, or one, does not necessarily agree with. And there's the rub, you know, because I have to agree with it if I'm going to be involved with it. And so, and the other thing about love that I didn't finish on the last reading was, I got to tell you, I'm 62 years old. I don't know what love is, truly. And I'm learning it through here. I'm learning about unconditional love. I'm learning about self-love, whatever you want to call it. I just lived my life not having a clue what love and tolerance was. And so that's just an amazing thing. I love this book. I love the black and white words in it. But I also, for me, like to talk about what's that look like for me in my life? What's that mean to me? And so this first line, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Oh my gosh, I'm a fighter. I'll fight with anybody that doesn't want to fight or wants to fight. I'll fight with God. I'll fight with anybody. And so I had to cease fighting. And a couple of years ago at work, well, let me go back. People that know my story, about 4 years ago at work, I worked for the same company for 27 years. And so 23 years of service, I thought I would have told you I'm an excellent employee. I always get good evaluations. Had this one manager I just kind of butted heads with, but who wouldn't, because she's wrong. She's wrong. I'm right. And I get called to the office. I've never been called to the office. I've never been written up. I get called to the office with two managers and a director. And was just my behavior and the way I treat people was discussed. And I didn't cease fighting immediately. In my head, I'm like blowing up, and I did have the common sense to say, I'm not gonna sit here and defend myself. I'll get back to you Monday, because this was Friday, because how dare they? You know, I'll get back to you. And so luckily, my sponsor did answer the phone then, and I won't go through the whole thing, but we did 4 through 9, and by Monday, I had seen my part in it, and seen my arrogance, and see how I disrespect other people's jobs and their ability to do it, and realize the whole story about the ass in the saddle is I am the common denominator. When I am disturbed, I am the common denominator. And so that was an amazing experience. I did not get fired, and I realized that I was in the wrong and willingly went there. What am I willing to do? I willingly went there after much, you know, the people that are close to me in AA knew how it was bad. It was a bad situation. And anyway, so I still have my job. And I've been there 27 years. I just had the best evaluation I have ever had. And I'm like, I'm reading it going, who's she talking about? This is nice. And I looked at her and I said, you're really good at this, because, I mean, I was flabbergasted. And it's a different boss, because that boss that wrote me up is gone. But anyway, and I'm still there. So to make a longer story short, because I'm talking, see, lips are moving. About a few years ago at work, we work in cubicles. There's six of us in a very small place, tight. And so I'm not the most agreeable person you might have gathered. And so usually, as my spiritual development goes, my first thing, stop the behavior. So zip it, Debbie, just zip it. Let them do whatever they want to do, zip it. So I got no opinion. I'm bubbling, and so then people in AA would hear, but I was able to zip it, and God's not happy with that. It's progress, and so he then has other suggestions for me to do to be a part of the group and a part of my job, and I started doing that. You know, how was your day, whatever this conversation is that people want to have at work. Anyway, so I became a part of the group and tried to be loving and tolerant. And I got to tell you, that I'm not going to go into details, but there's some things in there that I do not agree with. But love and tolerance is my code, and I try and practice that at work. So the girl that sits directly behind me, she's retired now, but she said, Debbie, I want some of your happy pills. And I said, well, I don't take any happy pills. What are you talking about? And she said, I've seen a difference in you. Where you're not fighting with this one. Well, she didn't use the word fighting, but you're getting along, and you just seem to be okay with the job and what's going on and what happened, what's different. And I said, I have ceased fighting anything and anyone. And I got to tell you, there is such relief in that. And I still want to fight sometimes, and I can still feel it building up. But if I'm going to be loving and tolerant and cease fighting, I'm going to have peace. And that whole thing about these are such subtle emotions. The first time I felt peace, I mean, I didn't want serenity. When that was all you had to offer me in the serenity prayer, it's like, forget that. Don't want that. I want excitement. I want chaos. I want, you know, adventure. And so it took me a while to want peace or to want serenity. And the first time I felt peace, I really thought something was drastically wrong with me because my head's not spinning and I'm still, because my husband says I'm like a hummingbird in a shoebox. I'm always going and moving and I'm like able to sit still for 5 minutes. And I'm like, something's wrong. Something is definitely wrong. And so today I can sit still, not a long time, but I can sit still for a while. But the other thing I want to talk about in here is this thing about, we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. Well, I thought that was ridiculous. I just worked 9 steps that you made me do. I've been doing my part, you know. And so I really carried that attitude for a while. It's like, I'm not getting this miracle of it, and it just comes, and, you know. And how it was explained to me, actually it was in a conference that I heard this, was that what the miracle was that I don't want to drink anymore. And I don't know when that happened. And I don't know when that obsession left. Because I don't know about your sponsor, but my sponsor, when I would say, I want to drink, you know, I don't feel good, blah, 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 blah. You know, I didn't tell you I was a bartender and my husband was a Budweiser beer truck driver. So I'm still surrounded by alcohol. And what my sponsor told me is, meet me at the bar and I'll buy you first one. And so, so they weren't kind. They were loving and tolerant, but they weren't kind. And so, but I didn't drink. And so what I realized after about 9 months and working, coincidentally working these 9 steps, was I don't want to drink anymore. And that just came. I had no power to bring that on. And so that's the miracle of it, is how I understand that now. And today, I couldn't tell you if they sell liquor or not. I can go anywhere I want to go. I'll talk about bars a little bit, because I did tend bar for the first 3 years of my sobriety. And I can tell you the days that I would, and I still went to bars and I would drink club soda, and I would drink them out of club soda, because I would drink the club soda just like I drink anything else. You know, I want another one. And so if I'm going to the bar to live vicariously through the men and the mood and the lights and the dark and the sleazy and the whole thing that I just loved about all of it, I still want to drink. But when I'm going to the bar because I got a reason to be at the bar, I love to dance, let's go dancing, or my friend's celebrating a dinner there, sure, let's go to dinner. I don't want to drink. I don't even know if they're selling the stuff. So my motives are real important in that. Something just went flying through there, but I guess it'll come back. So for me, the problem has been removed. I don't know if the alcohol is there. I mean, if it was in, last summer, maybe 2 summers ago, we used to go to Iowa, and we had a little house there, and the people there would drink 1 or 2 beers, and we'd have a campfire at the bonfire, and I'm a fire maniac, and so they had those little ATVs to drive around on, and they came up, and they're unloading, and they hand me this 12-pack of Coors, and there's some missing, and I'm just holding it, and immediately it's like, this is not going to be enough. Here, you take the beer because I don't need the beer. So I do still have that kind of recoil if it's in my hands, but I don't focus on that. I do feel like, I think this is the best promise in the book. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And I feel that most times in my entire life, not just in the bar or around booze or whatever. I just feel like if I'm doing these things, I feel safe and protected, and I'll talk about what it looks like in my life today on the next paragraph. Thanks.
Thank you all so much. You got about 10 minutes to wrap up the last paragraph, and that is on page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee, thy will, not mine, be done? These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
So once we looked up laurels, we had an idea that we're sort of celebrating victory and we're done. And for me, I think that this is about understanding the nature of the problem. And so much of my struggle was not knowing what the problem was and not therefore knowing what solution to apply. But knowing that the problem is, I am afraid in my natural state. I'm afraid that you won't like me, or if you like me, you'll stop liking me, or if I don't want you to like me, you will like me, or something good will happen and end, or good won't happen, or any situation, all the permutations of possibilities cause me anxiety. And so that's a fundamental part of who I am. And I tend to believe it's part of being human, and the world's pretty big and complex, and I'm much littler. But I know for me, I live with that anxiety, and it will come back. No matter how far it has been vanquished, it is coming back. The weeds are popping up, or the pot's going to start to boil, because I know that alcohol or some anesthetic, a drug, something, at least gives me a chance to stop that anxiety. And so knowing that it's coming back, you know, it's like one of these weeds you're trying to cut back and you think you've won, but if you don't get the roots out, it just keeps coming back. This one's, I don't know that I can get the roots out because I can't stop being me. I can't stop being self-conscious of the things I want and don't want and a natural attachment to them as much as I try to let go. So it is coming back. So there is no resting on my laurels because there is no real victory. It's not over. I've got to do something to stay in a good place so that when the ego and the selfishness and the insecurity comes back, I've got some defense. And so for me, the defense here, the program of action, we're talking about maintaining fit spiritual condition. And that is kind of fun sometimes to just ask people what they're doing to maintain their fit spiritual condition or raise it as a discussion topic. To me, I know what it means to me. We use this language in my sponsorship tree is staying current in my inventory. So I do an inventory to clean up the past and then I accumulate stuff over time. I don't want to carry any new resentments around with me, and maybe I do, and maybe I pick up a second or a third, but that's the place to be, is current, where I don't have anything as I'm lying awake in bed that I am mad at a person from yesterday or a month ago or a year ago or terrified it's going to happen tomorrow. It happens to me, but that's when I need to write inventory. That's when I need to take action to address it, because we've gotten to a place where, you know, doing your fourth step and your fifth step seems like a scary thing, or it's something we take a lot of time doing. But to me, that, and then, you know, the 10th step being that really the same thing on a continuing basis, it's not scary or time consuming or burdensome to me. It is the key that sets me free. If I can't shake off these resentments, they're basically going to suffocate me. And so I want to do the inventory. I just pray for the self-awareness to know that I'm starting to get wrapped up and I need to do some inventory. And when I get to that point, I want to talk to somebody about it because I don't want to carry it around. And that's where I feel I'm more sensitive to resentments now, and I'm glad, because I used to carry around so many resentments. It was crippling, and I just lived in a world of self-pity, and I didn't even really know it. I thought it was reality. Now I can see that my boss says something to me. At this point, he says anything to me. It could be, in fact, today he asked me how my weekend was, and I started critiquing that. I'm like, oh, great, now he wants to know how my weekend was, or he doesn't really want to know how my weekend was. That was the most offensive thing. I like it better when he says something like, go do that, and then I can be resentful because he's telling me what to do. or he has expectations or he evaluates my work, that's one of the things that really ticks me off about my boss. But this one, the how was your weekend? I was like, you don't really, in my head, you don't care about my weekend. You're not going to listen. We've done this for 6 years. We've done it every weekend. I'm going to start to tell you, and you're actually going to have wandered off. But for me to get a resentment about the fact that he asked me how my weekend was, I know this is where I'm struggling. This is the single resentment that pops up when I review my day to see what's blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit. It's resentment at work. It's with my boss. But I also know what the solution is. And I've been doing some writing. And I'm looking at what is my part. And I'm talking to people about it because I don't want to go alone. And I don't want to put my head in the sand because this is the kind of thing that's going to build. And this spreads from being mad at my boss to being mad at everybody at work, to then being mad at anybody who I support because I have a job, and then that's pretty much everybody, friends, family, and that's the world I'm going to drink in. And so I want to be current with my inventory. And when we check in, that's the one thing I want to be able to say. Am I current? Yes or no? And if I'm not, I have work to do. And then the last piece for me is, you know, talking about thinking of others, which it does here, it does everywhere in the book. And there's not a lot of things you could guarantee a new person if you talk to them, but I really do believe you can guarantee anybody if you try to help somebody else or think about them, it will alleviate your suffering, no matter how bad a shape you're in. We can't always grab the tools when we need them. We don't always have the inspiration, but calling someone else an alcoholic and asking them how they're doing and just giving them a chance to break whatever they're wrapped up in is being of service. And I stop thinking of myself for even a moment. And that's really what I need, is this train of selfishness, of delusional selfishness that gets rolling and faster and faster. I need to stop it for at least a minute to pause, to let God in, to get some inspiration, and just picking up the phone or listening to someone or trying to do my job in a helpful way, anything that I can do to think of others, it breaks the cycle. It gives me a chance to my spirit to breathe. And so that's where I think here we're trying to practice all these principles every day so that we have a solution in place. But I know that if I just pick up the phone and call a couple of drunks and ask them how they're doing and stop thinking about myself, I know my day's going to get better.
All right, let's say, I'll do it quick, or just cut me off. Let's say. So we hear all the time about maintaining our spiritual condition. It's our sobriety is based on it, daily reprieve. Very seldom do you hear every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. All means all, Debbie. And so what does my spiritual condition look like, and what is my spiritual program of action? And I love talking about that. And so here's two examples. So I've been, like I said, 2 weeks of, you know, don't get in my way, don't get in my face. I'm irritable and have an attitude. And so I've done this long enough to know that, you know, I only know these really coarse, gross emotions of rage and jealousy, to very subtle emotions now, where I know when I say something that could be a little questionable, or maybe truly innocently say something, and I see my husband's face, I know I just hurt him, and I shut up. You know, where before, I used to set him up. I'm gonna say this, he's gonna say that, and zing, you know? And so that's what I can base my spiritual condition on that. How I affect you and how I am aware of that and being in that moment of what am I doing? And so the two things recently that have happened, so I didn't reach my sponsor and I'm still irritable, and how I know I'm getting through it is because I did these actions. So this weekend, I have a very dear friend who we go on little knitting adventures because I'm old now and I knit. And so we went to Whitestone and we went to Richmond and we stayed the night in Richmond and we had dinner and just had a wonderful weekend. And she's not in the program, but she's been to Al-Anon. And we always talk about God and spirituality and these principles and the steps. And I told her, you know, I'm the common denominator here. I'm looking for a saddle and just talking about what was going on and, you know, how inconvenient people were in my life here recently and how I know that I'm the problem. And just doing that, it was another person, because I talk to God all the time. He knows what I'm doing. He knows, you know. And so that was the first actual person that it talks about, talk to someone quickly. And then, so I just came home yesterday and I felt great. You know, I just felt spiritually fit again. Like, I'm not irritable. They're not whining. My husband can breathe. It doesn't bother me. And I'm good again. You know, I'm good again. And so today at work, we have a new girl, and she kind of just zings you. Not mean, she just has a lot of questions, one right after the other, and I'm coming off of a very high-octane weekend of caffeine, and I hadn't had a lot that morning, and I was like, just stop, wait, I need some time to process all of this. And I could tell that I had, again, I've heard her. And so I turned around in my cubicle, I said a little prayer, what do you want me to do, God, what do you want me to say? And I told her, I said, I'm sorry that I just kind of snapped there. I'm just coming off some caffeine. And then, you know, they can all relate to that because we're all swigging the caffeine in the office. And you know, just give me a minute to look at the whole thing and I'll give you an answer. Now, last week, I would have stopped at zip it because that's all I could have done last week. But now I'm spiritually fit and I feel spiritually fit. And I was able to say, I'm sorry. And that's what this is about to me today. That I can more quickly get back into that sunlight of the Spirit and say, just use me, God. I'm the channel. What do you want me to do? And I'm happy to be back there, and I'm really happy that we were on Step 10 tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. That was wonderful. Let's thank you. We will now pass the Seventh Tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Okay, are there any AA-related announcements? Lexi?
Hey, Lexi.
Awesome, thanks. Anybody else have an announcement for this home group? Monday, April 3rd, we are going to be having our supper and a speaker, and it's going to be Evan C. from Charlotte, who used to be a home group member here, so come out and hear him. We're going to have a potluck at 6 p.m., and at 7 p.m., Evan will start speaking. Go grab some yellow flyers if you like on the literature table.
Thanks.
All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would home group members please raise your hands?
Strong.
Okay, and the most important part of the meeting, newcomers. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you?
My name is John.
Hey, John.
Welcome.
Keep coming.
Anybody else? All righty. There is literature available at the table on the other side of Debbie. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase any, and if you can fold it, it is free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up to talk to me or ask me any questions you might have. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Let's thank our panel one more time.
Thank you.
Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 10 at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is a Mexican restaurant off of 20th Street and Colonial, just before the train tracks. And could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Oh, yeah.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, and lift your thoughts to him as and to your fellow. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. We're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,